You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now, let's get on with today's show. How do you navigate raising a girl today as a survivor of abuse or PTSD? What if your daughter witnessed you being very ill or losing a sibling or tragedy striking? Join me on this incredible conversation where we dive into topics such as surviving sexual assault, hyperemesis gravidarum, loss of a child, stillbirth, and more. Lindsay Gibson is an author, motivational speaker, birth psychology, and maternity health specialist. She's the author of Just Be, How My Stillborn Son Taught Me to Surrender, and the journal Just Be Guide, Steps to Healing Trauma. In all the areas Lindsay works with, her mission is helping to bring light back into mothers that promotes inner healing. Whether it's through her teaching, speaking, or blogging for all things in motherhood, healing or natural living, inner healing and joy for women is her goal. Through her own personal story, she has found that healing her past traumas and facing what she has struggled with has not only strengthened her relationships with her daughters, but it's cut the cord of the trauma and pain in her family. It's given her daughters separation from what she has been through so they can grow confident, strong, and continue their life's mission and purpose within their own identity. Well, welcome, Lindsay. It's so great to have you here today, and I'm really excited about our conversation. We've been friends and colleagues for a while now, and so I really know your history well, and it's been amazing to see the transitions that you've made and the exciting work that you're doing right now with women and empowering them. I would love to start out with you just telling a little bit about your background and your story, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you for having me. So it's been a long journey. I am a complex trauma survivor. So what I mean by that is I've suffered from multiple traumas starting at the age of 16 and all the way to the loss of my son, who was born still in 2013. I have a 11-year-old daughter who surprised us in 2006. So she's my fierce firstborn daughter, I like to call. And she has been through a lot of the trauma journey with me. So she has seen me at my lowest, and she's seeing me rise up from it as well. We also have a 2-year-old rainbow baby. I like to put quotes around the rainbow because for me it was a hard rainbow journey, even though she was a true miracle coming after the loss of our son. I am the author of my memoir, Just Be, which is going to display the whole journey in detail, but it's been a long walk, that's for sure.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what are some of the things that your older daughter has experienced with you, part of your trauma?
So at 16, I was violently attacked. I escaped and went on to graduate high school, and I went to Boston. I ran to Boston, more like it. I went to college in Boston, and as I was saying before, my daughter surprised me in 2006, my junior year of college, my husband and I. And so as you can imagine, I was not in a good place. I was not well. I used the term run to college because that's what I did. I went into complete denial mode. I thought, okay, if I just get out of Connecticut, ignore what happened, make some friends, go to college and experience that, it'll all just go away. I masked it with lots of partying, lots of jobs. I kept myself busy, busy, busy. Then Lillian came and life just completely unraveled for me, but kind of in a good way. And let me explain. So she was born But I had a lot of destructive behavior. I was partying too much. I was doing things that I shouldn't have been doing. Lillian kind of anchored me, stopped all that behavior, and I fell into motherhood with pure joy. I, again, ignoring myself, focusing on my firstborn daughter, and I thought, okay, this is another distraction, but this is a healthy, good distraction. And I thought I was doing a good job. I thought I was doing a good job putting on a face and ignoring what happened. I thought she wouldn't notice. And the early years with her were pretty uneventful. But I always felt like I was holding my breath. Like, I can't let my emotions out. Got to stay strong. So therefore, it was really hard at the same time. And it only enhanced a lot of my anxiety and made it worse. And it wasn't until recently that she really found out what happened to me, but it's been hard. It's been up and down more so than I thought that I was doing. Cause like I said, I thought I was covering up in front of her and that wasn't the case. So she's definitely seen me in many, many situations. So.
So tell me about your son. And I know that we are both survivors of hyperemesis.
Yes.
And I would love for you to touch a little bit on that and do a little education on that, because I know you're a huge advocate for that community. And tell us a little bit about the journey with your son and how that affected Lily during all of that.
Yes. So that's another trauma she watched me go through. Hyperemesis gravidarum, it affects, I think, up to 2% of the pregnant population. It's an extreme form of vomiting and nausea during pregnancy. Oftentimes, it doesn't end for many HG sufferers. For me, both with my son and with my second daughter, Layla, I had it pretty much all the way through. Third trimester, it kind of eased with Layla. With Joseph, it was all day, every day, to the point where I had a feeding tube with him. And I was on a PICC line at home care with both of them, but Joseph's was definitely much more severe. For Lillian, she was shocked. You know, she has friends who have younger siblings. She's seen her friends' parents pregnant. And so in her mind, she had this image that that's what pregnancy is like. Then with me, it was completely different. It scared her. She cried a lot during Joseph's pregnancy. She was afraid I was going to die. She got angry. She kept saying, it's my fault because I wanted a sibling so bad. I wanted you to get pregnant. So she blamed herself. It was rough. And I didn't have enough strength to really be able to console her a lot of those times. So my mother had to step in. My husband had to step in a lot. But it definitely was not easy for her to see. And then to lose him, we lost him. We found out at 26 weeks he had passed.
Right. It's a rough situation for both of you, especially being a mom and being pregnant. And, you know, your first experience with Lillian, you didn't have hyperemesis. So that's a huge shock. I know for myself with, it was my first pregnancy that I had hyperemesis, my second pregnancy that I didn't. And yeah. That's the kind of crazy thing with this illness is that we don't know what causes it. And it's right. Not something that you will definitely have with all of your pregnancies and,
right.
You know, for Lily to see that. And I'm sure what's going on in her mind about when she becomes a mom one day, you know, is this the thing she thinks that, you know, she's going to have, is that something that you've discussed with her and worked through
yes.
with her?
Yeah. So she's in fifth grade and we have recently this past summer talked to her about, you know, where babies come from, sex and all that. And that was the first thing she asked me, actually. And I was really surprised because you never know how that conversation is going to go and
right.
what kind of questions she's going to ask. And she just looked right at me and said, well, I'm never going to get pregnant. And I said, okay, you're a little young to kind of draw that conclusion. I said, why? And she said, because I do not want to go through what you went through with Joe and Layla. And it really just dawned on me. That was actually the first time it dawned on me. I really need to talk to her about not only about that, but just everything that I've been through. And because shortly after that, she said something else that was interesting. She also said, when women get pregnant and have babies, they're sad. And I said, okay. And what she had meant was the sadness she has watched me go through since she's been born. And so in her mind, she put it all together that it's her fault and that pregnancy must do this. And she drew up her own conclusions. And I realized then I've got to talk to her. We have to talk. So, it's been hard. It's been so hard on this child.
Yeah. But I love that you have put together and you acknowledged and you're seeing that she's making those connections because of a lack of conversation.
Yeah.
Right. Because you have in the beginning, you tried to skirt the issue to protect her.
Right.
It allowed her to create her own stories. And now you're having the conversation on that. And yep. I know and what I love about you is there's a lot of things I love about you, but what I love is that you're open and you're honest and that you can say, you know, I made the choice not to say anything thinking I was protecting her. This is what happened, you know, as a result, but now we're going to address it. And that you're sharing that story, because I think there's so many instances out there where things happen to moms or they go through situations that are hard in life and we try to hide everything. We don't want our children to see us crying. We don't want them to see us upset or angry.
Right.
We don't want to talk about something bad that might have happened to us. And what we don't realize is that they pick up on everything.
Yes.
And that they create their own stories.
Yes.
And that opening up conversation and dialogue and just saying, hey, you know, this thing happened to me and this is how I felt about it. And, you know, at the time I didn't really know how to respond, and just having open dialogue with them, you know, and help them process, you know, how they're feeling. So what are some of the things that you spoke with her about all of this to try to start opening up the lines of communication on everything?
Well, first and foremost, I acknowledged her feelings. You know, children, they need that first before you can really get logical with them and dive deeper. And so the first conversation I ever had with her was just confirming, you know, Lillian, this is making you sad. How do you feel about watching me go through all this? And she, I'm lucky in the sense that she wears her heart on her sleeve. So she will, you know, some kids you have to kind of maybe pull it out in different ways, but Lillian will just lay it out if you ask her. And that definitely made the conversation a lot easier. After she shared her feelings, I had to pull back and really reflect. You know, here I am, I'm a sexual assault survivor. I'm a stillbirth mom. I've been through a lot in between, and my daughter has been with me most of the way. So it was the first time I really put myself in her shoes, and it made me realize how in tune our children are with us. No matter what smile you put on your face, they can sense and feel everything. I mean, they grew 9 months in our womb. They know us from the inside out, right? And I had to really think about it because, you know, sexual assault, how do you explain that? How do you explain that to your child? And I realized I had to, because I'm writing my memoir. She's going to read my book one day, and it will be soon, especially in her teenage years. So my husband and I then went back and opened up a second conversation with her after she kind of cried and she expressed some anger, and we let her get that out. Then we sat down with her and we said, let's talk about now from mommy's perspective. So we had to kind of break it up in two different, we didn't want to overwhelm her. She's only 10 years old at the time. And she said, okay, what does that mean? And so we had to explain why mommy has been sad. And she said, okay, good. I am really glad you're going to be honest with me about this because you have been sad. And again, that was really shocking because I'm like, I thought I did a good job hiding it from her. And we started with, we didn't want to go into her brother and the sexual assault in one conversation. So we really had to break it up in multiple conversations. And the sexual assault was the first thing I told her. And I didn't go into gory details or anything like that. I just told her a man hurt me and without my permission had sex. And so she really had to like really think about that. And we let her process it for a few days, and she came back and she said, that makes sense, Mom. That really, really makes sense why you've been sad. So that opened my eyes to a lot. And it really opened my eyes, especially to how our trauma can impact our children, even if they didn't go through it with you.
Yeah, that's a powerful story. And I think it's even more powerful that you shared something so private and so personal with Lily, but it's a moment of a really wonderful moment to educate her, right? Because
yes,
sexual assault is something that is so quiet and that no one wants to speak about. And there's so much shame attached to it, and guilt and anger and rage and sadness. And for you to have this conversation with your daughter and say, this is something that happened to me, and her seeing what the result was of you not reaching out for help at that time and getting what you needed. And I'm sure you've had the conversation with her about if something were to happen to you, these are the steps that we need to take to get you help so that this doesn't happen to you in this way. And
we talked about like healthy touching versus unhealthy touching, giving the yes, that it's okay to do that. Yes, we absolutely went through the whole boundaries, all the boundaries when it comes to relationship and sex and things like that. So it's been quite a few conversations about that.
But you know, it's amazing that you're doing it because these are hard conversations to have.
I definitely, you know, and my husband actually was the first to do it. So when we first started talking to her about this, here I am again, trying to hold back. I didn't want to cry. And you're going to read about a part in my memoir where I finally let the tears go in front of Layla and how that positively impacted my relationship with her. And I realized I had to do the same thing with Lillian. And so I'm like trying to hold on. The first time I really cried about what had happened to me in front of Lillian, it transformed our entire relationship. She put her arms out and she hugged me. I might cry just thinking about it. And she said, "You are the strongest person I know, Mom. And I want to be just like you because I'm watching you now get better." You know, she didn't use the term healing and inner healing or any of that. She said, "Get better. You're getting better." And she said, "You're less angry now, Mom. And it's okay to cry with me. I like that you're crying with me because I cry to you all the time." And I'm like, oh my God, she's like this little ancient soul in this little body. And it strengthened our bond and it made her much more open with me because she's going through puberty and she's just starting that journey. And I really think it's opened her up to me more to be able to ask more questions and to trust me and to know, you know, that you can rise up from the ashes. And, cause I want her to have that strength as she moves forward.
So. Yeah. And I think being vulnerable with your children and showing, you know, all the facets and sides of what it means to be a human, what it means to be a mother. And it's not just all sunshine and roses. That motherhood is comprised of a wide range of emotions is teaching her so much. It's teaching her that the emotions that she's feeling over certain things are normal. It's going to teach her when she's older and if she chooses to be a mother, to be able to reflect back at her own, you know, watching her own mother go through her own journey and seeing that it wasn't always happy. Is really powerful. And for you to be authentic and vulnerable in front of your children makes them more likely to trust you and open up. And I've seen that myself with my own girls. And for many years, I've always been, you know, the tough cookie, not crying in front of people. You know, I was a paramedic for years. So I learned really quickly to shut down and actually become very cold to protect myself. And just recently, I was having one of those days and I was tired and stressed. And I think it was around the holidays and I broke down just sobbing in the office to my husband, just sobbing and talking about what was bothering me and sobbing. And my oldest came in really quietly and I saw her, but I was really just dumping everything I needed to out. And she came in and she sat in my office on the beanbag chair and just listened and watched. And I cried and got out everything that I needed to get out. And my husband just sat there and held space. And she looked at me and she was like, "Wow, Mama, that was some speech." And I giggled and I was like, "I'm sorry, you know, I'm sorry, Alexa, you're seeing me crying." She's like, "No, Mama, you got it all out."
Right. That's what we teach them.
"You got it all out now.
Yep.
Don't you feel better now? Do you want a bath? Do you want a bath?" Because she knows that's one of my self-care things. Right. And I really try to teach the healthy self-care with my girls. "Do you need a bath now?" Yeah. And I realized, that instead of her being scared, right? Like if I had ever seen my mother cry when I was younger, because I'd never seen my mother cry, I would think that there would be something terribly wrong.
Right.
Like I would be scared to see my mother get upset or cry. Mm-hmm. But my daughter just witnessed me have like mega mommy meltdown.
Right.
And she was like, oh, you're going to feel so much better now.
Yeah.
And see it as like a normal process. And then she put together like, so what do you need to do now for self-care?
Yeah.
And I realized the importance of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And teaching her those skills.
Yep.
So talk to me a little bit about, you know, Layla. So, you know, you lost your Joseph, and then you go back and you decide to try for another child and you start with the hyperemesis all over again.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when I met you.
Yeah.
And how was that for you, obviously? How was that for Lillian?
Layla was, she was the pivotal turning point for me. She was the one who presented the wall. Mom, you either go this way or this way because you're at a wall now. Right away when I lost Joseph, I went into, for a few months after I lost him, I got into this, I need to get pregnant right now urge. A lot of lost moms go through that because their arms feel so empty and you just want to be pregnant again. My husband was smart enough and knows me well enough, because some moms do get pregnant right away and that everybody's different. But for me, he knew he knows me. He said, we need to wait. You need to have some time. The other thing is you were so sick. Let your body get strong again. And that's what made me realize, yes, I do need, my body is very weak. But because his loss was the first thing to awaken me to what happened to me at 16, and I don't want to give away too many details of my book, but that's really what happened. It also, for the first time, opened me to grieve from the loss of my innocence. And so here I am, grieving my son, grieving what happened to me at 16, and fighting it all at the same time. It was really scary. And then wanting to be pregnant because, you know, I wanted another baby. And I focused heavily on my body and working out, filling it up with nutrition, not really focusing on the emotional stuff like I should have been. And about 8 months later, I said, okay, I think we can do this. But I was kind of like, yeah, back and forth. And then we went to England for 3 weeks and had a blast and stress-free and got pregnant with Layla. And actually I started, I must've gotten pregnant like maybe right before we left actually, or right in the beginning, because it was three or four weeks later that we left and I started getting sick on the plane ride back to the United States. And I thought it was the food. Wasn't, it was Layla. And before I had even a chance to even think, I thought, okay, well, here it is. We're pregnant. And, you know, I had my best friend said to me, well, you must be so thrilled. And I wasn't. I actually wasn't. And that's why I use the term rainbow loosely. To me, it was black and white. It was really hard for me. And a lot of lost moms can definitely nod their heads to this one. Yes, to be pregnant after loss is a very scary thing. And then to get sick again, because that was the first thing I said, oh, I hope I don't get sick again. I hope it's like Lillian's pregnancy, because I don't think I can handle that emotionally. Nope, got sick again. And while it was a little less severe than Joseph's, it was still PICC line and constant throwing up and I'm grieving all at the same time. And my past is pushing through all at the same time. And here I am trying to hold it together. Lillian's watching all of this. And while she was less frightened with the hyperemesis this round, because she's like, okay, all right, got this. We know it's not going to kill you. And she was a little bit older. And so she was definitely much, much better with the hyperemesis part. She was watching me fall apart and grieve over Joe. And I neglected holding space for her to grieve during that time, forgetting that she's grieving too. It was really rough. And I had to take it hour by hour. And I had a lot of hands in me. I had the HER Foundation, which is a national, and I think it's international actually, foundation for hyperemesis. I had their volunteers on me. There's a organization here in Connecticut called Hope After Loss. I had their hands on me. I had my therapist. I had my mother. I had my husband. I had a lot of people around me. It was impossible almost at times. It was, you know, I there was many times I was still saying, I want Joe. I didn't want this baby. And I know that's horrible to say, but I think it was because I was not, I hadn't allowed myself to really grieve the way I should have. And she was born huge again, 10 and a half pounds. My other one was 11 pounds. And so I wasn't surprised by that. And when she came out, the first thing I said when I heard her cry is I said, is he okay? And I completely disassociated. And because of my past PTSD, it's not uncommon for that to happen. The nurses were like, does she not know she's a girl? And my husband said, no, I know what's going on, because she was born on his due date. So that made it extremely bittersweet day. I disconnected. And for the first 8 weeks of her life, I really don't remember. I was not in a good place. I was not, my best friend could even attest to this. I was not nice to her. I wasn't nice to anybody. I couldn't take care of myself. I couldn't think. I felt like I was floating around, and I wasn't really in this world. Everybody was carrying on. Rainbow Baby was here, but I was stuck. And I realized I had definitely had postpartum depression, severe, but it was more, I think it was just a PTSD and grief all coming back all at once. And it was Layla, though, who was the first to show me that even though I was awakening to what happened to me, I wasn't receiving the love. I wasn't receiving what people were trying to give me. And she showed me that. She showed me that with the touch of her hand around 3 months old to my face. And she still to this day will cup my face like this to remind me, Mom, you need to surrender, let go, and let love come in. And so it was the hardest, yet it, like I said, it was the pivotal turning point for me with her.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, a lot of what you talk about with your delivery with Layla, I can actually identify with. And so I think there's definitely a huge component that you had with your PTSD magnifying that. But, you know, nobody talks about women that go through the hyperemesis and what happens afterwards and how that can affect people. So I had hyperemesis with Alexa, my oldest, and not with my second. And, you know, while mine was not as severe as yours, I also had a lack of care, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I had practitioners that were telling me that it was normal. I actually wasn't ever diagnosed with hyperemesis until afterwards, after I had her.
Yep.
You know, my mom was a nurse, so there was a lot of home care that I would get through her, not necessarily through my providers. And when she came, and I had a 54-hour natural delivery with her, with some complications, I remember her coming out and I looked at her and didn't know who she was. And I kind of just pushed her away. Mm-hmm. And
when you're that depleted of nutrients, it really can mess with your mental and emotional health.
Yeah. And like you, I had, you know, postpartum depression to postpartum psychosis. I don't remember most of the first 12 weeks of her life. It's a blur. I walked around like a zombie crying, because she had severe acid reflux, couldn't nurse, couldn't even bottle feed. And I had a lot of resentment towards her for a very long time.
Yes. I can identify with that too. Yes. Oh my gosh. It was almost like, why did I do this kind of thing?
Yes. Oh yeah. Why did I do it? When she would cry, I would, you know, hyperventilate. I would break out into hives when she would cry and get upset. And even as she got older, there was a hard time connecting with her emotionally. And I didn't see it until I actually worked with, someone doing EFT therapy when she was around 3.5 years old, because she was bit in the face by our dog.
Oh, I remember that story.
That was kind of, for me, the turning point for me with her. And I was so traumatized over it that in working with the provider to get through that trauma, all the birth trauma came up, all the trauma from hyperemesis came up. And I saw how I had been closing down and pushing her away. And, you know, myself, I lost a child between those two before I had my Aria. And so when you talk about, you know, that wanting to get pregnant right away and then you find out you are, and when you lose a child and my loss wasn't, you know, as far along as yours. A loss is a loss. A loss, but your innocence is gone.
Yes, your pregnancy innocence, absolutely.
It's gone. Yeah. And all I was waiting for was the hyperemesis to hit.
Yeah.
And for me to lose the baby again.
Yeah.
And these are stories that people don't talk about, and they don't understand.
Yes.
You know, what they're feeling is normal. The women that go through that, how normal that is. And that there's resources. I'm great. You know, I will definitely share with our listeners, the HER Foundation, and how to access them. What are some resources that you've found, that are helpful out there for women that are going through some of these things to reach out for help with?
For hyperemesis?
Hyperemesis, the PP, you know, the PTSD or the sexual assault, any of those, you know, we need more resources out there and access to them.
Yeah. So like I said, the HER Foundation is wonderful. They have a team. Actually, one of my advanced readers was the head of the volunteer coordination for the HER Foundation. He will send a team of volunteers to call you if they're in the same state as you. I had two or three girls come into my house, sit with me, and just for hours. And because we have volunteers in almost every state, just knowing that they had gone through it I didn't have this with Joe because we didn't find them until after. But with Layla, I did. Just knowing they went through it too brought strength in me. So every time they would come by, it was like, you know, and then they would call me in the cards. I got so many cards. They also have resources for doctors that they list that they know are good with this condition. With Joseph, I had a different doctor, but she did not handle my care. Yes, she ordered my PICC lines, and she definitely recognized that I was very, very sick, but she did not handle it the way I felt I needed. You know, there was many times where she said, if you just stop thinking about it, maybe you'll feel better. And I'm like, oh, you really think I want to be laying here on the couch day after day staring? Because I couldn't even watch TV because the motion on the TV made me throw up.
Yeah, that's an uneducated provider on the condition.
Exactly. So they have a resource list of doctors in every state that are good with this condition. I found somebody through them, and that's who I switched over to. They're in Trumbull. And it was like night and day. You know, they never ever used any psychological viewpoints or anything like that with me whatsoever. They were super, super supportive, and they were men too. And they were very, very understanding. They were very aggressive in my treatment, much more than with Joseph. Maybe that's why it didn't seem as bad, because I had that support.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. I love this conversation. It's really brought up a lot of clarity for me on my own journey. We've touched on some really powerful topics, and I know our listeners have learned so much. To find out more about Lindsay, you can find her at www.lindsaymariegibson.com. Again, www.lindsaymariegibson.com. To hear the rest of this interview as we further explore this topic, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com and become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details. Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.